The Premier League is back this week after the international break, and we know how much we missed the Premier League while it was away. But how did the Prem get to be the behemoth that it is now? Let's speak to a man who might have some of the explanations. It's a warm welcome to Jimmy Burns, whose new book is called The Premier, Big Business and Great Football. Jimmy, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Martin. Thanks.
Yeah, quite appropriate to be talking to you because a lot of your book is about the foreign influence on the Premier League. And we speak to you on the weekend that we have the first German manager of the England national team. Really, I suppose, you know, the fact we had a couple of foreign managers in Fabio Capello and Sven-Göran Eriksson, a German manager is a new step, but it's all part of the fact that the Premier League has become basically an international league.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the appointment of Tuchel as manager of England is part of, as you say, of a long process in English football, in Premier English football, which really began when the Premier League was launched on a basis of a very clear commercial strategy, which is to go to take English football globally via, you know, broadcasting, streaming, satellite, internet, everything, just cross borders, and reach out to the world and turn it into the league that what eventually became almost a clearinghouse for the best of sort of foreign players and some of the best foreign managers. You know, it's been a process of more than 30 years, and you just have to look at the numbers of foreign managers who are in the Premier League today. And as you say, the appointment of Tuchel, which will divide the opinion of fans, I think, for all sorts of reasons which we might or might not discuss. But I mean, it is part of a reality, you know, and the reality is that, you know, you've got people like Pep Guardiola with Man City. You've got, you know, other well-known managers who have dominated the Premier League and have produced not always but some, most of the time, some pretty amazing football.
Yes, I mean, how did we get here? Because in 1992, when the Premier League started, the first scorer was Brian Dean, good homegrown name, and it was still a hangover from the old First Division. You know what I mean? It wasn't at that point. We weren't expecting the money that came into it and the influx came. How did we get here?
You've got a much more kind of incisive memory than I have, Martin, on you know, picking up that. And I mean, but let's not romanticize too much, you know. I mean, those of us who remember going to just certain English stadiums in the pouring rain and being incredibly uncomfortable, but not seeing great football all the time. I mean, certainly compared to the kind of football one could see on the continent. And I speak to you as someone who's an Anglo-Spaniard and has lived most of his life going backwards and forwards between the two countries. But I mean, I think how we got here is you know, various stages, but certainly in the early stages of the Premier League in the 90s, as you well know, you had two phenomena which I think were very important. One was obviously Ferguson and Manchester United, and Manchester United's own kind of, they were way ahead of other clubs in terms of going for real international, global, commercial, strategic venture. And then you had, of course, the arrival of Arsene Wenger. Who is he? You know, this Frenchman who appeared sounding like an academic, which he was, but who not very many people in England, let alone London, had heard of, and who not only sort of turned up as manager of Arsenal, but transformed in many ways sort of English football culture. You know, through diet, through the kind of players that he was bringing in, the foreign players. I mean, let's not forget that he brought in people from the Italian Premier League who actually. Premier, who were actually on the subs bench, and turned them into some of the stars of Arsenal over the great Wenger years, you know. So, you know, you had all that process, and then you had, you know, the big, these foreigners who kept popping up and actually, you know, laying their stamp on, for better or for worse, on English football. I mean, you know, look at Eric Cantona, you know, reciting poetry people couldn't understand, kicking out at fans with his kung fu, but yet playing the most amazing football, which his own colleagues have recognised in their own memoirs.
I suppose one of the things is that what happened, or one of the big changes, was we started bringing in young players from overseas. You know, you weren't just buying stars. And often in the past, when we saw an influx into foreign football, it was sort of already established players like Ozzy Ardiles or whatever, you know, the Argentinians that came to Spurs and all that. We had a bit of that. But then you got Fabregas, which is, you know, as a Spaniard, you'll be familiar with his story. I mean, he was at Arsenal as well, a 16-year-old.
Yeah, Fabregas is a very good example of the young talent that was brought into the Premier League. You know, I mean, of course, the sort of downside of that, you could argue, and some fans would argue, is that maybe, you know, not enough investment, as the Premier League promised to do, was going into youth development in this country. And you know better than anybody that the kind of, you know, to what extent did that feed into a national team which just wasn't up for it, in terms of the sort of pathway between youth academies into clubs and into the national team. Whereas in places like Spain, of course, you had the sort of Real Madrid academies and the Barca academies producing incredible young talent, you know, which then fed into, you know, the first team of those clubs, who went on to become Champions League champions, and also a very successful Spanish national team, La Roja.
How much do you think Abramovich had to do with it? Because obviously the whole thing, and this can be a criticism as well as praise for the Premier League, the whole thing was built on money, you know, on huge money, you know, and we don't look too closely into where his money came from. In fact, I did speak to a Chelsea fan once who said, you know, I said, how do you feel about Abramovich and where his money's come from? And he said, well, when I watch Chelsea play and I watch these great players, I try not to see the field stained with the blood of Russian peasants, sort of thing. So we did, you know, the Premiership was built on money and probably excluded a lot of people as well. You know, when you look at ticket prices now and how difficult it is to, you know, to get a seat in some grounds, et cetera, et cetera. It's not all a story of sweetness and light, is it?
No, I mean, definitely not. It's a very controversial league. Given that you mentioned Abramovich, we're obviously, and you sort of, your anecdote of your conversation with a Chelsea fan. Well, I mean, you know, in the book, I sort of reflect, you know, quite a few Chelsea fans, as you've known, I've known over the years. And I mean, you know, everyone hates Chelsea fans if you're not Chelsea. but you know, if you're not Chelsea, it's pretty awful going to Stamford Bridge, quite frankly. And I've been there on several occasions at the wrong end. But you know, if you had this conversation with a Chelsea fan, I mean, as you're the one you talk to, I mean, basically, Abramovich, they loved Abramovich. They loved having him there attending most of the matches, you know, as one of them. They loved the fact that he had a lot of money, the fact that there was a big question mark of how he'd made that money or where it came from, just didn't come into their kind of concerns. I mean, what they saw in the 13 years or so of Abramovich's ownership was Chelsea going through its golden years, indeed going through quite a few managers as well, as you know, of all different temperaments, but an extraordinary array of very good players. And sort of Chelsea fans look back on those years, I mean, particularly if they compare it with the current American owners who I don't know, they sort of play with players as if they were playing some sort of, I don't know what they're doing, some sort of bingo, you know. But, you know, buying a whole lot of players without thinking about what kind of team you're putting together. In the Abramovich years, you had, you know, very, very good Chelsea teams. You know, you had with incredible players, and the Chelsea fans loved it. But to go to your main question, I mean, obviously, if you accepted the Abramovich years, saying, you know, as a fan, and said, well, look, you know, I couldn't care a toss about where the money came from. What matters is, you know, we've been really successful. The ticket prices is a different thing, of course, because your ticket prices have gone up everywhere, and that hits the fans who haven't got the money to really afford it. But the fact is that, you know, the real football fans, what they like to see is their club winning and winning well. You know, they suspend the kind of moral judgment that perhaps you and I use when judging other sectors of our society. Somehow, in football, this extraordinary thing, which I've never, after all these years, I haven't quite got my head around. But I've never, you know, covered a sector as a writer or as a journalist where ethical judgments are suspended to the extent of football, you know. Yes. And I suppose that reflects on the strange things that happen to you and me and fans when they go see a football match, which is sort of 90 minutes of, where you're completely cut off from the rest of the world, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in the midst, you know, finally, really, you know, we talk about the glamour of it and the money of it and everything. And in the midst of all that, there was room for a fairy story, and that's Leicester City, which you cover.
Yeah, I mean, Leicester City, well, was the sort of, you know, well, the fairy story, you can call it. You can call it the sort of David taking on Goliath, the minnow sort of managing to win the Premier League. With the evidence of hindsight, we can say, well, actually, it was a one-off for Leicester City, you know, because what happened after they won the Premier League, as again, you know better than I do, you know, the big clubs started buying their best players and basically ripping apart the Leicester City that had won that Premier. But that year was an extraordinary story, and I try and reflect that through the words of some of Leicester City's most avid fans, you know, who lived that extraordinary day when they won the Premier. And of course, all mixed up with the tragedy of the owner getting killed in that helicopter crash, which could have turned into a massacre of the fans had it fallen, you know, in the middle of a match on the fans, you know. But so that was all mixed in. And as you know, football, when it mixes success with tragedy, we saw it in Munich with Manchester United, it turns into one of the enduring legends of English football. I mean, just on since we began on that note, and it's obviously very much in the news, but I mean, on Tuchel's appointment, I mean, again, with my Anglo-Spanish hat on, but I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he does, okay? But if you look at the Spanish team, which of course, at the moment is probably in FIFA ratings, probably the best national team in the world. It has a manager there, De La Fuente, who was brought up from the youth team, and who, you know, the secret of his success is precisely because he knows all the players he's got. He's known them since they were very, very young. And this has turned into a winning project. We shall see what winning project Tuchel can transfer from club football to national football.
Yeah. Jimmy, thank you ever so much. Do appreciate it.
Thank you, Martin.